Hi, my name's Steve Usher, and welcome to the Experienced Designers Podcast. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Experienced Designers Podcast. So today, you're going to meet Sharon Sutherland-Green. And Sharon and I met at an impromptu co-working gathering here in Stockholm. And I was immediately impressed by Sharon's passion and willingness to do something about improving the workplace and empowering people to make positive changes. And so much so, this drove her to create the Human Workplace Manifesto. And we discussed kind of what drove her to create this manifesto and, of course, her natural flair for the Swedish language. So thanks ever so much for listening and enjoy the show. So hi and welcome to another episode of the Experienced Designers Podcast. Today I have a very special guest, Sharon, who I would like you to introduce yourself to the audience, please.
Okay, hello. My name's Sharon. I work for a company, my own company called Imagine If, and I'm also in the process of writing a book called The Human Workplace Manifesto. I am rubbish at skiing, even though I live in Sweden, and I think I'm an average tennis player, and I am married to a Swede. So
amazing. And how long have you been here now?
Do you want me to say it in Swedish or English?
Both.
I have been here for 5 years.
For all the English listeners out there, she's been here for 5 years.
God, my Swedish rocks.
Amazing. Almost as good as mine. I'm not going to even share mine. Amazing. Amazing. Sorry. So tell me about the, let's jump in, because I really, yeah. When we first met, which was before Christmas, at a impromptu co-working spot in a hotel lobby here in Stockholm, you shared with me the manifesto that you'd created, and I haven't read it in detail, but the headers and the areas that you cover me, I have to say, just because I'm in that way of thinking as well, my heart sang actually on so many of the points. And I just thought, you know, you're definitely onto something for sure. So I just, just tell us a little bit more about it.
Okay. The Human Workplace Manifesto. First, like, let me put a bit of context on this. I worked in advertising for about 13 years and then went into learning and development. And I was really lucky in that I was able to spend 7 years as head of learning or head of management and development at The Guardian. And it was during that time and since then, since I've moved to Sweden, that I really noticed there's a shift in how people work. We don't turn off from work anymore. We're doing a very good job of damaging the planet. I see a lot of fat cats scraping off profits and taking them out of communities and banking offshore. And I hear horror stories about huge conglomerates not paying their taxes. And it made me think, well, what can I do as a really, like, one person? What can I do to help shift the thinking and to help us all work together more and to focus on the things that matter and make a difference in the world? And the Human Workplace Manifesto, it encompasses all of those buzzwords that you hear in HR, like CSR, diversity and inclusion, the people value chain. And essentially, it's just about being human and giving a damn. And it's been probably 3 years in the making. I've had some experiences. I've coached thousands of people. And a couple of people during the last 2 years really inspired me and really set me thinking that this is the right time to launch the Human Workplace Manifesto. And it's 8 key principles about how to work harmoniously, how to set people free in the workplace, and you know, why a purpose-driven workplace is better for everyone. So it's about sharing profits with the communities in which we work. It's about saving and helping to save the planet. It's about the mental well-being of your people and letting them work to their strengths, which is hugely important. And at a time where we're not in the Industrial Revolution anymore, we don't clock in and clock out. In fact, there's no set 9 to 5. We need to shift, we need to change, and we need to set people free to work in their flow. And yeah, I think I just feel that it's the right time, and we can all make a massive difference.
Yeah, it's a there is. I mean, I see it. There's a huge shift on a number of levels within the workplace. Some of it's driven by technology, as we know. But also, the change in needs and wants and demands of also different workforces are coming through. That's been shaped, you know, through their upbringing. Just going back to something which you mentioned, the two bits of inspiration. Or two people, I guess. What was the inspiration? Where did that come from?
Well, I was coaching someone, and it was quite. They were going through quite a difficult time, and you know, it was quite a senior leader actually. And I realized there was a real lack of compassion in that particular organization, and I saw suffering in people. And it's something that I want to avoid. And I think we can all work harder. And I think love and compassion should be part of the corporate world more so than ever, because there's such demonstrations you see on a daily basis of hate and, you know, not valuing diversity. And I wanted to put the heart back into the corporate world, really.
So what's stopping it happen? I mean, you've highlighted and noted, you know, there is this lack of compassion, or there's this. Where is it coming from? Is it kind of systemic, historical kind of leadership that's coming through? Then we've got a new wave coming through, and then we've got this clash that's happening at the moment. Or what? Where do you see? How do you see it?
Yeah, I think it's a mixture of the two. If you're removing human beings with digital technology, and digital is an amazing thing. You know, it brings people together. I've got family in Canada, and I can communicate with them on an ongoing basis much more than I could have done like 10 years ago. But also it removes the human from the process as well. So whereas you probably wouldn't say the things in person to somebody that you would email, or email is really misinterpreted. You can't kind of solve things. You don't understand the tonality. And we all see things as we are, not as they are.
Yeah.
So, you know, the context is really important. But I feel that the human connection needs to be driven through the workforce, not to the exclusion of digital. I think that can be enhanced, but we all need to be more aware of the impact that that flip email might have on someone that's doing doing their best and probably receiving that message in a way that's totally demoralizing for them. So
what do you think perhaps over the next decade, what do you think are going to be some of the ramifications if companies aren't adopting or adapting to
human-centered,
if you want to call it that?
I think that employees these days have a real say in how the company works and how it operates. And, you know, there's been some real cases over the last 2 years, particularly in huge companies not paying local taxes in the UK or, I can think of a couple of examples at the moment. And their employees are driving the change there. They're saying, you know, we're not going to put up with this. We want to create a positive impact on the world. And we expect the same from you. It's no good. It's not good enough anymore to just cream the profits, fulfill the shareholders and, you know, damage the planet.
Yeah.
You know, we've all got a part to play.
Yes.
Yeah.
So how would you go about kind of, I guess, implementing the manifesto? So if you were to kind of work with an organization and bring the manifesto in, what kind of steps do you envisage there being?
Well, there's 8 key principles.
Yeah.
And these key principles can be measured against criteria. So if you take, for example, purpose, well, does everyone know clearly the what the purpose of the organization is. And is that motivating to them? You know, people need a bigger cause. They need to be part of something bigger rather than in a corner just doing their own thing on their own autonomously. Mm-hmm. We do need autonomy. We need autonomy, mastery, and purpose. Millennials today in today's workforce, but we also want to be part of something bigger.
Yeah. I saw a stat, I think I released it on my social channels last week, which was 40% of the workforce have a clear understanding of what the goals and objectives of the organization are.
Wow.
Which I was like, well, let's just flip that one. Say a 60% don't. They go into their jobs every day.
Yeah.
Not really understanding what this is actually for or what's it about.
Yeah.
It beggars belief, really.
No. I think putting the responsibility on these huge companies, if you think in 20 years' time, we're probably going to have three companies ruling the world. And it's time for us to drive that change and not accept the fact that, you know, they use plastics, or we can all do such small things.
Yeah.
But if we all do them together, they'll make a massive difference. So
yeah,
that's what it's all about.
Yeah, very good. So what else? I guess let's bring it to kind of the trends now over the next 2019. What are you seeing for this year? Do you think is going to have a big impact in the workplace?
Technology, of course.
Yeah.
Humanity. I really see it. I was never very political. I'm not going to get political here either. But I have been inspired by probably the wrong things that are happening in the world. And the Human Workplace Manifesto is a stand against inhumanity. And somebody asked me the other day, why don't you call it the Humane Manifesto? The Humane. I can't even say it. The Humane Working Manifesto.
Yeah.
And then I said, actually, because I don't think that the inhumanity is that obvious. Because when you think of inhumane, you think of locking a dog in a car with the window closed in 30 degrees.
Yeah.
And so I still think human is better than humane. But I'm open to suggestions on that. What do you think?
I think human.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of stuff around at the moment. It's human-centered design is a big area, big focus right now. I think there's a whole thing around, I can't remember the exact quote, but it was, and I agree with this, something like we are in some of our most exciting times to actually create services and products for humans, with humans firmly at the center of it, not to be led by the technology or the product or service, etc. So, and I do agree with that. I think right now we are becoming far more focused around the human first approach, although there's still organizations that are making decisions daily without even considering their customers. This will be a really good product or service without really clearly taking the time to truly understand. So and then we talk about empathy as part of that as well. So I think there's all of that kind of happening, for sure.
I spoke to a doctor from KTH about the Human Workplace Manifesto, and he kind of reflected it back to me as being humans take on the robots. And he said the more that technology infiltrates every part of our lives, the more collective we become in being human. And the only USP we've got is being human.
Correct.
So I thought that was quite a cool way of looking at it.
I think one of the challenges we're going to face, and it's coming, it's already happening. I mean, it's not even about a trend in the next couple of years, but I certainly think there's going to be an element of existing workforce. So we talk about, automation of some of those services or products, or processes will make some of those jobs redundant. So there's an element there that I think challenge A is like, how do we assist those individuals to reskill, upskill, develop. Because ultimately, in my mind, I think lots of organizations are just going to go, thanks very much, and remove, gone. And then there's a proportion of workforce, which is around how you then coexist around the technology. So the role changes. And then you have the next generation coming through about how, if they got the right skills for what's required, for what's coming, even though the jobs don't even exist yet. So how do you connect education to that? So there's some bonkers things going on, I think. It's just managing all of those kind of three areas that I see.
Yeah, I think as well, you know, the people part of it is setting people free to fail. You know, we don't work in a transactional role anymore. It's about having a creative license and fresh thinking and, you know, encouraging reverse mentoring in organizations and, yeah, setting people free to fail. And then you give them the freedom to learn.
Yes.
And tomorrow will look different to today. So if you're not comfortable outside of your comfort zone, it's time to change.
Definitely. And I think actually that's where I mean, just because I only experienced it in the last couple of years, but certainly things like design thinking, for example, when you follow some of that methodology, it does get you outside your comfort zone. You feel it. I mean, I've been there. You properly feel it. But actually, that's exactly where you need to be. So because that's where you can then start to get far more creative, in my view. But also as well, it's interesting because this has been mentioned on virtually majority of my interviews on this podcast series so far, was actually around failing and having an environment, a safe environment for people to fail. And failure is seen as part of learning and developing. It's interesting.
We
it's interesting.
In what during my tenure at the Guardian, we had to were restructuring, so we had to lay off. I think it was around 100 people, and during that time, when change happens, we're like a tortoise. We retract into our shell, right? Because we want to go into the comfort zone. We want to do the things that we know we can do well. And actually, the best time to try new things and to encourage people to, you know, come out of their comfort zone is during a period of change. So we set people free to fail during that period. It was 2 years and we were in a whole separate period. That means that the other company were buying us out. But we had to go through all the terms and conditions. So I had all of our middle managers qualify as business coaches so that they could coach all of their teams out of their comfort zone. And during that two-year period, we went from number three in the market to number one. And that was because we set people free to fail. And there's 1% of companies in the world that achieve any sort of growth in that kind of hold separate, it's called. So, you know, it just shows you the power of it.
Yeah, it does work. And I think that just comes around to say creating a safe environment where people where it's and just changing the perception of that word failure and actually just it's test, learn, reiterate it and then test, keep going.
Test, learn and review. That's what it was all about.
So you got your seven...
Eight. Yeah.
I was listening.
The planet's the last one. Yeah. Not a biggie.
I'll leave that one over there. So which one, when you were writing and creating it, which one or two? Actually, no, give me your top two. Give me the ones that really for you, I mean, all eight, I'm sure, but really, what's your top two that really hits you right in the heart? Come on.
Well, I gave it to someone to read. And the first one is people or purpose, both of them. I can't pick. It's like asking me to choose my favourite record, really. Okay, I'm going to choose people. And people because it's all about accepting the 360 person. When I started at The Guardian, I was brought up Catholic. And I never really felt at home. I always took I left a bit of myself at home because I'm a gay person. And when I went to The Guardian, I felt really able to be 100% myself. And this in turn helped other people bring them their full selves to work. And honestly, Steve, I don't think I've ever enjoyed a job so much because I wasn't hiding anything. I was just my true self. So I think that is kind of key. And it takes away, I was bullied badly at school, and it kind of eradicates that bullying behavior as well. So that people for me, and yeah, maybe I'd say profit as well, because we only need a certain amount to live.
Yeah.
And we only need a certain amount. This sounds really idealistic, and maybe I've lived in Sweden too long. But we only need a certain amount to live, right? And yet there's thousands and thousands and billions of people starving. And you hear horror stories of companies making billions of pounds because they've laid off people. Or recently I heard of somebody that made a huge amount of money, had done all the banking offshore and never paid tax into the communities in which they serve. And, you know, this is in the UK, and those communities need the money more than ever for new schools, for healthcare. The NHS is being starved of oxygen. So
do you know what area they were in the UK?
I do, yeah.
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 Is it north or south Midlands?
It's both, really.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, all over the UK. So, right. These communities are paying for a service, and the money that they're investing is hopefully generating more money for them. But I think there needs to be a little bit more investment and a little bit more stringent control over the fact that if you're going to operate a business in this community, give back to it, please.
Yes. Yeah, not have it just part of a CSR program.
Don't just tick a box, please.
Yeah. Make it meaningful.
Yeah.
I'm going to share some with you because something you just mentioned there, I was like, oh, this could lean in quite well. I want to get your opinion on it. I just got my notepad out because it was something which I actually came across the other week. So I saw a presentation on YouTube the other week.
Yeah.
And it was by a chap called Thomas Bjorkman.
Oh.
I don't know if you've heard of him at all.
No.
So Thomas.
Hello, Thomas.
Hello, Thomas out there. So he's written a book. I think he did. Oh. I think always one of it was a book called The Nordic Secret. I'm going to read it because I have to say this story is amazing.
Okay.
And basically he talked about obviously we've got this kind of upgrading of our society happening right now. And internally we've kind of got a situation where we've got this kind of instability or uncertainty or all this technology development, and within cultural in society, we've got this real, I think it's called the VUCA situation, where you have this, I can't remember exactly the words, but it was basically we have this uncertainty that's really within the communities. And how do we encourage people to become empowered to obviously then co-create the future society? I thought, this is quite interesting. And he talked about these five areas, which was around openness.
Mm-hmm.
So do I have a curious mind?
Mm-hmm.
Meaning making, and can I see the larger patterns?
Mm-hmm.
Perspective seeking, so can I understand others' perspective?
Yeah.
Quite interesting. Self-leadership, do I have the courage to be authentic, be myself? And compassion, do I care enough to act? And it was all about, these are kind of the transformative skills, internal skills that we will need now to help us kind of take, us as kind of society or human beings to actually take society forward.
Yeah.
And he cited an example here in the Nordics. I think it was about 100 years ago, he said about 150 years ago, the Nordics were some of the poorest was some of the poorest region in the world, but now it's kind of seen as the number one happiness, and some of the metrics are out there.
Yeah.
And the government or those that were kind of leading the countries at the time, they created some little hubs around or getaways where people could go to allow them to find their inner compass and to find themselves effectively before they then went out and creating their own movements. And it was, and they put that down to, I think it was 10% of the population, Nordic population, went through these retreats. And then that created the movements that was needed to then
develop. I like the sound of that.
It was a really interesting one. And I think there's a lot that can be taken there from a leadership perspective
mm.
to create, you know, if we get enough leaders going through some kind of, whether it's through increase in empathy, whether it's a, you know, compassion, whether it's the manifesto,
yeah.
To then to use that as a catalyst and create the movement, because it's because it happened 100, 150 years ago here in the Nordics.
And the great thing for me is I remember I had a phone call and it was a lady on the other end of the line that I was working with, I was coaching, and she said to me, "Hello, I need some help. I want to be a leader." And I said, "Oh, how super. And I'd like to be an opera singer." And the funniest thing is, and the great thing is, and this is where the opportunity lies really, is you can apply for a job, right? You can get a manager's job anywhere because you're allocated or given that job. You're never given the job as a leader. Your peers delegate that responsibility to you.
Mm.
So it isn't a job title. It's an attitude. It's something that you demonstrate that people want to follow.
Yeah.
And for me, I don't think leaders should be the higher echelons of a business. I think they should be everybody that wants to create change.
Mm-hmm.
And the Human Workplace Manifesto relies on everybody getting involved
yeah.
and being a leader that wants to make a difference.
Yes. Yeah, because it, you know, the, and this is something which I've definitely noticed from my work from an HR perspective is, you know, just remove title, remove salary oh, yeah. banning, remove all of that nonsense.
Yeah.
You are a human being and yeah. you have the capabilities to create a movement or change yourself.
Yeah.
If you really want to do that.
Yeah.
And you know what? If you're working in an organization that isn't allowing you to do that, then my advice would always be move on and find somewhere that will allow you,
exactly.
will help you to actually achieve that or be part of that.
I'm working with a company here in Sweden called Tough Leadership. And they are promoting self-managing organizations to
Great.
Do just that. And I know they've had heaps of success. I've been on their training courses recently. And it is all about, you know, setting people free again.
Yeah.
It comes back to that. And I think we need to do it
yeah.
quickly. And
yeah.
I think we need to measure the results for it.
Yeah.
It.
There are some really, and I actually want to get a couple of them on my on this podcast in the future. Certainly, I've got that's an aim for this year. But I think there's kind of ABN AMRO and ING that I've become aware of who are really, yeah, they're changing the organizational structures in its entirety to allow
Great.
To allow this to help happen so that
yeah.
actually people then become much more self-organized and self-managed. And then there's a,
yeah.
it becomes, I've mentioned it before, but it becomes like a liquid workforce where, you know, you go onto a project because you
yeah.
want to be on that
oh.
project and you have a passion for it. And
so,
you have, rather
so
than, oh, you're available, you're a resource.
Yeah.
Come onto this project and then you don't you're not really into it,
no.
but you have to do it because you have to.
And it takes so much pressure. Why should one person be banging a drum in a meeting on a Monday?
Mm.
You know, let delegate it over.
Yeah.
You know, let's share the load.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Mm. So, parting gifts or advice we can give out to anybody. Well, tell me about any books. Any really good books that you'd like to share?
Oh, good question. I'm one of those blink readers, you know, like I like to understand the context and then sort of my takeaways from it. So let me think. Best books. Personally, the one I read is Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway.
Okay.
Susan Jefferson.
Mm.
And I kind of think it was the reason that I say yes to most things. In it, she says that we've only got two real fears, the fear of dying and the loud noises, and the rest we make up. So we're great liars. And yeah, so it's true. And so jump in, say yes, and let's all make a difference together.
Yes. And what's next for you? What's your plans for 2019?
I'm doing the book, The Human Workplace Manifesto, the book. Just at the moment collecting case studies under each principle. So
mm.
I'm speaking to a technology company actually in Stockholm in Sweden. about the purpose-driven workplace. And I'm also talking to technology companies about their approach to diversity and inclusion. I'm working with some very inspiring people. I'm carrying on training and working and to change cultures for the better.
Yes.
And just getting up to mischief generally.
Is it the companies you are speaking to, is it mainly Sweden or further afield?
Oh gosh, no. I work with companies in Sweden, and I also work with companies in the UK and across Europe.
Brilliant.
Including France and Vienna.
I might have a company for you in Helsinki.
Whoa.
I will share it after this podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah, I met last year on that one. It's really good. Fantastic company.
Oh, great. Thanks.
So Sharon, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you very much, Steve.
And and I will put everything in the links if anybody wants to contact you.
Yeah.
And also, can we give a link to the manifesto? What's the...
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'll give you the access to it.
And we can go from there.
Go from there.
I love it. Thank
All
you
right.
so much.
Thanks.
Thank
See
you.
Ya.
Cheers.
Bye.
And there you have it, another episode of the Experienced Designers podcast. Thank you so much to my guest Sharon. It was an absolute blast. And of course, hearing your Swedish skills absolutely blew me away. I will put all of the links to the manifesto, as well as your LinkedIn details, if anybody wants to get in touch. And I wish you all the very best in the future with the manifesto. So if you like what you hear, then please like, comment, share, review, rate, do whatever's necessary. Print t-shirts, put stickers on the bumper of your car, whatever's necessary to amplify the Experienced Designers podcast and help me build this movement and community. But thank you ever so much for listening, and bye for now.